the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, January 6th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Africa remembers former U.S. President Jimmy Carter as official funeral ceremonies for him get underway.
My memory of President Jimmy Carter is a human being who was very much as an example of what a person must be like regardless of your title.
The Bidens are set to visit New Orleans days after a deadly attack. Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi begins a four-nation tour of Africa. 31 hotels in South Sudan sued the government in the East African Court of Justice for unpaid hotel and accommodation services rendered to officials.
They are suing them basically for failure to settle the claims. We are demanding 44 million, but with the interest, 10% interest per year, for all these years, it has reached to $61 million.
And the struggles by past U.S. presidents to downsize government. Those stories plus Samson O'Malley's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Six days of official funeral ceremonies marking the life and legacy of the 39th U.S. President Jimmy Carter are underway in his home state of Georgia. Viewer's Kent Fairbaugh has more.
The sun rises over Plains, Georgia, differently these days for shop owner Philip Kurland, as he and others in this rural community of about 700 people mourn the passing of its most famous resident, Jimmy Carter.
We were hoping we were going to be planning his 101st birthday, but the realization is he'll be with Rosalind. He'll be in a far better place, and he's really done as much as he can for the community and for the world at this point.
While he was known by the codename Deacon to the Secret Service officers who protected him for nearly five decades through more than 140 different countries, Jimmy Carter is more than a former president and humanitarian to those who lived alongside him in the place he called home for a century. As Carter's hearse and motorcade made its way through the town at the beginning of 6 days of funeral activities, Kurland reflected on Carter's personal impact on him.
There goes my hero.
It's the beginning and the end.
Jill Stuckey is a Carter family friend and superintendent of the Jimmy Carter National Historical Park, which includes his Depression-era boyhood farm outside Plains, where the funeral motorcade paused on its journey through Georgia.
So a president starts planning their funeral the day after they're elected. This has been planned for decades.
A plan Stuckey and others are faithfully fulfilling as Carter's flag-draped coffin made its way through Georgia.
I haven't grieved yet. I'll probably grieve when it's all over with.
Kim Fuller is Jimmy Carter's niece, the daughter of his well-known brother, Billy Carter. She's also his neighbor in Plains and carries on his legacy at Maranatha Baptist Church, where Carter taught Sunday school lessons since leaving the White House in 1981. While she admits the funeral activities are keeping her busy, there are difficult moments of reflection.
Something just flooded over me. I'm saying, you know, we're doing this because he's dead. He's gone. And I had to go outside, you know. So there are moments when it hits me just overwhelmingly.
As members of the U.S. military stand at attention at Carter's flag-draped coffin at the Carter Center in Atlanta, thousands of visitors like Atlanta resident Walter Ramsey have one final opportunity to connect with Georgia's only president.
I wasn't alive for his presidency, but this really helps make it feel like you know Jimmy.
People will continue to pay their respects to President Carter in repose here at the Carter Center until Tuesday. That's when he'll be transported to the National Capital Region for official ceremonies there, before he returns to Georgia on Thursday, July 9th, when the official ceremonies take place in his hometown of Plains, Georgia, which will also be his final resting place. Kane Fairbaugh, VOA News, Atlanta, Georgia.
The body of former President Jimmy Carter is expected to arrive in Washington, D.C. on Tuesday, January 7th, to lie in state at the Capitol building, followed by a funeral service at the National Cathedral on Thursday. Meanwhile, Africa and the rest of the world are remembering the late 39th U.S. President. Elliot Masocha is a Zimbabwe-born professor of business and political science at DeVry University in Columbus, Ohio. He tells me that Africans are memorializing former President Carter for his contribution to public health in Africa and for his humility.
My memory of President Jimmy Carter is a human being was very much as an example of what a person must be like, regardless of your title, regardless of who you are, regardless of which country you come from. Because after his presidential term, he went back to the world and became a world figure, somebody who was interested in human rights that we know is a big problem in Africa. So his eyes was in Africa, his help was in Africa and throughout the whole world and in the United States of America as well. For us Africans to learn to treat each other as human beings.
What do you remember about his policies during his presidency? You are from Zimbabwe, and there are suggestions in some writings that he played a role in the independence of Zimbabwe.
My memory is that his policies were to support the independence of Zimbabwe, and his policies were also to support Zimbabwe after independence, especially in terms of education that was heavily sponsored by international organizations, including the United States of America, to the point where schools were formed everywhere. And that was not going to be possible if it was not because of President Jimmy Carter's policies when he was president and, urging Britain to give Zimbabwe independence as well, because, you know, we were under the British. And without the support of the United States of America under President Jimmy Carter, I don't think Britain was going to be willingly give Zimbabwe its independence.
I wonder if you can speak to this comment made by someone that the Carter Center's most significant contributions to development have been in the field of African public health. Can you speak to that for us, Professor?
Yeah, that's something that, you know, we appreciate as Africans as well, because public health in Africa is very much weak. And he knew that that was an area where he needed to focus on, and he tried his best. Because without public health and looking at how weak our healthcare is in Africa, he saw that public health is key. Prevention is better than cure. So you have to educate people so that they don't get sick and go to health facilities that are not up to standard, that are not going to help him. So I hope and pray that African leaders and Africans in general will take it up from that and understand exactly why former President Jimmy Carter was focusing on that.
You alluded to this from the beginning of our discussion, Professor, and that is, as we remember the late former President Jimmy Carter, what lessons do you think we should all learn, whether you are in the leadership or you're an ordinary person?
Lots of lessons we are supposed to learn as leaders to begin with. When you lose honorably. Okay, he lost, you know, his second term, and that was fine with him. And he congratulated the person who won, and he learned again from his loss with his party. And then after, you know, his presidency, he did not just go back and disappear and enjoy his luxury. No, he again led the people into many programs like that, public health, building houses for the poor. But how many African former leaders do we have right now who just got out of power and disappeared with all their wealth instead of learning from what Jimmy Carter was doing?
Elliot Masucha is a professor of business and political science at DeVry University in Columbus, Ohio. President Joe Biden visits New Orleans today, Monday, in the wake of a deadly New Year's Day terrorist attack. The FBI is investigating and says the assailant was inspired by Islamic State. Viewer Arash Arbasadi has the story.
Closed-circuit video captures the moment when 42-year-old U.S. Army veteran Shamsu Dinjabar rammed his truck into crowds of people early New Year's Day in New Orleans. A black Islamic State banner was recovered from the truck, prompting the FBI to investigate this as an act of terror. U.S. President Joe Biden says federal agencies are investigating all possible links.
Federal law enforcement and the intelligence community are actively investigating any foreign or domestic contacts and connection that could possibly be relevant to the attack. We're going to continue to relentlessly pursue ISIS and other terrorist organizations where they are, and they'll find no safe harbor here.
14 people died in the attack and dozens were injured. Jabbar suffered a fatal gunshot wound after opening fire on police. The FBI says Jabbar stashed improvised explosive devices, or IEDs, in drink coolers, one of which they say he placed at a busy intersection. The Department of Homeland Security says this is another case of what it calls homegrown violent extremism. U.S. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas, speaking Sunday on ABC's This Week, as carried on the social media platform X.
It is a very difficult threat landscape, and it is why that we as a community, not just the federal government, but state and local officials and residents, need to be alert to it and take the precautions necessary to avoid violence from occurring.
Later on New Year's Day, and more than 2,000 kilometers away in Nevada, U.S. Army Green Beret Matthew Livelsberger drove a rented Tesla Cybertruck to the Trump International Las Vegas Hotel. The Clark County coroner confirmed the highly decorated Livelsberger, whom officials say suffered from PTSD, died from a self-inflicted gunshot before the truck exploded. Officials say no one else was seriously hurt. Law enforcement says there are so far no links between the attacks. People in New Orleans held a party-like vigil for the victims of the New Year's Day attack. President Biden and First Lady Jill Biden plan to visit the city on Monday. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Monday, January 6th. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And still to come on our program, Samson O'Malley Sports. Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi began a tour of Africa Sunday to Nigeria, Namibia, Chad, and Congo Republic. The visit is expected to last from January 5th to the 11th. David Awurawo is a professor of international relations and strategic studies at the University of Lagos. He tells reporter Mike Mbonye that the Chinese foreign minister's visit is aimed at consolidating Chinese diplomatic engagements in Africa.
It's a good one, and it is not unusual. It is what China has done consistently in the past 35 years, since 1990, that your first foreign visit in any new year has been to Africa consistently during this period. And during this period also, Chinese activities in Africa have expanded diplomatic engagement, trade, investment, infrastructure development. All of these things have expanded in the past 35 years, during which period they have visited Africa consistently early in the year. It's a good thing. Hopefully it would further expand Chinese bilateral relations with Africa, and of course trade investments. All of those things have benefited China and also Africa as well. So it's in line with Chinese diplomatic activities in the past over three decades.
Sir, what do you make of this visit, especially coming before the inauguration of U.S. President-elect Donald Trump? Do you think the Chinese want to preempt U.S. African policy, or do you think the Chinese are playing a fast one to make sure that they have a grip of the continent before Donald Trump is inaugurated?
I don't think it is in competition with the United States as such, because it's something that China has done consistently in the past 35 years, since 1990. Their first visit outside China in every new year has been to Africa during this period. It is just a coincidence that it is taking place at a time when an American president has a policy of America first, and that first also counter all the other great powers is to be inaugurated. I think it's just a coincidence. It will be good for Africa because expectedly the United States, I mean under Trump, would want to respond quickly to see how China would, or the United States would also expand its activities in Africa. You recall that in December 2018, when Donald Trump introduced the Prosper Africa Initiative, it was in response to Chinese increasing activities in Africa so that the United States would not be left behind. Of course, everybody recognizes Africa's immense potentials in terms of resources, in terms of human capital, and all that.
That was David Aworowa, a professor of international relations and strategic studies at the University of Lagos. He spoke with reporter Michael Bonya from Lagos, Nigeria. Lawyers representing over 31 hotels in South Sudan have sued the government in the East African Court of Justice for what they called unpaid hotel and accommodation services rendered to officials. They are seeking over $60 million in punitive and general damages. South Sudan Justice Minister Ruben Mandol Arole refused to speak with us unless we made our request through what he calls official diplomatic channels. Wani Santino Jada is the lead counsel for the plaintiffs. He tells me that the failure to pay for hotel services violates key principles of the East African community, including rule of law, human rights, accountability, social justice, and good governance.
We are not planning to sue. We have already sued them on the 31st of December 2024. The summons is out from the East African Court. The government has been given 45 days to file defense under Rule 28 of the East African Rules of Procedure. So we are suing them basically for failure to settle the claims to the hotels. The government decided to bring the rebels and accommodated them in the hotels in Juba. So they have been there and they have not been paid since January. They keep writing to the government about payment. And most of the hotels here are owned by foreigners and some owned by South Sudanese. So we decided to go to court so that the court has to rule and order the Republic of South Sudan to pay these investors.
So how much in monetary damages are your clients demanding from the South Sudan government?
We are demanding $44 million, but with interest, 10% interest per year. For all these years, it has reached $61 million. We are demanding $61 million United States dollars from the government.
Did you try to negotiate this with the government to reach an amicable settlement?
Yeah, this is a very good question. We wrote a letter to the Minister of Justice, and a letter was written to the head of the Constitutional Committee, Truth, the law, the Secretary of the President. And we later got a letter on the 12th of December 2024. And in that letter, one of the paragraphs indicated that the settlement should be concluded within 7 days. But I got the letter on the 22nd, when the 7 days has elapsed. On the 23rd, I got a letter from the Minister of Justice, the Attorney General of the Republic of South Sudan. But again, that letter is having a lot of issues. That letter has not indicated when will the settlement start. It is just an open sheet. So I just wait by just buying time, because a candid lawyer or a vigilant lawyer will know the committee, have your position paper.
So you are going to the East African Court of Justice. Does the court have any jurisdiction over the government of South Sudan?
The East African Court has jurisdiction as long as you have invoked Article 6 and Article 7 of the treaty establishing the East African Community. Article 6 and 7 of the treaty requires the partner states to adhere to the principle of rule of law, human rights, accountability, and social justice, including good governance. Now, failure to protect investors in South Sudan is just an abuse of rule of law. Secondly, failure to pay all these claims by the National Constitutional Committee, it is so that this country or this particular state has poor governance. So we need to show to the court the aspect of poor governance in that particular state. So the court immediately will have the reduction in respect to poor governance and rule of law.
When would the case come to trial in the East African Court of Justice?
The rule requires the parties suit to find their defense within 45 days. So the 45 days will start running from yesterday.
Wani Santino Jada is the head counsel, the lead counsel of the plaintiffs. He was speaking with me from South Sudan's capital, Juba. 102 men were executed by the Congolese government in the past week, and 70 are set to be executed today, according to the Congolese Minister of Justice. The Associated Press says the men, aged 18 to 35, were armed robbers and street bandits, locally known as Kulondas, and were executed in the northwest of the country at Ajenga Prison. The latest flight of 70 more people from Kinshasa has arrived at Ajenga, but the government has yet to comment on the status of the prisoners. It's time now for Daybreak Africa's Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Monday morning to you, Samson.
Good Monday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with athletics. Double Olympic champion Beatrice Chebet of Kenya, an Olympic 10,000 meter silver medalist, Behew Erigawi of Ethiopia, lived up to their status as pre-race favorites by capturing commanding wins at the Cross International Juan Muguerza World Athletics Cross-Country Tour Gold Meeting in the Spanish town of Elgoibar on Sunday. It was the first time that both winners retained their titles in Elgoibar. Newly minted World 5 kilometers record holder Chebet of Kenya won the women's 7.62 kilometers race in 25 minutes 49 seconds. The men's 9.71 kilometer race was won by Behew Erigawi from Ethiopia in 29 minutes 36 seconds. Erigawi became the third athlete to take back-to-back men's victories this century to match Kenya's Abraham Chebet, victor in 2001 and 2002, and Leonard Coleman, who took the spoils in 2010 and 2011. Now to cricket. Ahead of the 2025 ICC Women's Under-19 Cricket World Cup in Malaysia, Nigeria's junior female Yellow Greens will be involved in two warm-up matches against Pakistan and Scotland during their final campaign in India. After two phases of preparations in Benin City and Lagos, the team will depart Nigeria for India, where they will face Pakistan on Monday, January 13th, as well as Scotland 2 days later. Both Pakistan and Scotland are also billed for the second edition of the Women's Under-19 World Cup, with the Asians in group along with England, Ireland and the United States, while Scotland are grouped with Australia, Bangladesh and debutant Nepal. The last friendly comes 3 days before their first match at the World Cup against Samoa at the Borneo Cricket Ground, Sarawak in Malaysia. And out of football news, where the Football Association of Zambia has announced Nora Hoptil as Copper Queen's new head coach on a 3-year deal. The Swiss tactician recently surprisingly parted ways with the Ghana Football Association after guiding the Black Queens to the 2024 Women's Africa Cup of Nations finals to be staged in Morocco in July 2025. The Football Association of Zambia General Secretary Ruben Kamanga pointed out that Hoptil had been hired to consolidate the gains made in the women's game as a former Switzerland international replaced Bruce Mwape. The Copper Queens have already qualified for the 2024 WAFCON finals, and Hoptil will be hoping to guide the team to its maiden continental title. And now to the elite club competition on the continent, the CAF Champions League. The group stage match day four fixtures were played across various venues from Friday through to Sunday in high-stakes encounters as Africa clubs aim to secure their spots in the knockout rounds. And that does it for this Monday's edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good Monday. And that's it for this Monday, January 6th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for beginning your week with us. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms, including Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing that you will have a great week.